We're going to, in some way, celebrate and be caring for our mother, the earth. So I have her up there for a while until she has to yield to the more left brain stuff of the schedule for the morning. Well, this is already the fourth meeting of reading through the book Eager to Love, The Alternative Way of Francis of Assisi by Richard Rohr. The two chapters I have are 6 and 7, an alternate orthodoxy and the integration of the negative. I'm afraid I'm going to be doing more reading than I really would like to, but if you've achieved, the age past 75 a bit, you find that nouns just will not obey you anymore. In this journey with Francis of Assisi and with these chapters, I think we can go more deeply into Francis's love of creation, his alternative way, both in terms of nonviolence and non-main street. The words of Gandhi, I think, could be a theme of today. Live simply so others can simply live. That theme reverberates back to Francis and forward to many who live this planet and who love this planet. And in particular, I think of Pope Francis, who I know inspired me last week. And I will talk a little to his most recent encyclical, Laudate Si. Believe it or not, I chose these chapters. I have an in with Judith, and I said I would like to do the one on the via negativa, the negative way. I don't learn easily. Years ago, when I was first a therapist, I latched on to the topic befriending the shadow. And I would say for about 10, 15 years, I presented on befriending the shadow, adult ed, some things at Pacifica, my courses at Pacifica. My husband was on the board of Retreats International at Notre Dame, Indiana. So I got to go back to my alma mater, Notre Dame, and present befriending the shadow. And I tell you, that almost never in the presentation did I not have to experientially experience the shadow. What I found was that the shadow is not nice. It's not generous. It's not helpful. It's not congenial. All of these are not part of its job description. So on most occasions, I had to endure an acting up of my shadow. One particular time, it was a week-long class that I was doing. On one occasion, just prior to it, I was there for a conference on James Hillman. And if you've read any of him, he's pretty controversial. Well, at this particular conference, he was attacked royally by many people, and the conference was in his honor. So I had a day to recover from that conference till mine began, and it was the first time that Don wasn't there at Notre Dame with me when I was presenting. And I don't know if you've discovered this, but I know that if I am experiencing some kind of victimhood, some kind of persecutory anxiety, I become tell me what the word is. An attraction for people who have excess a magnet for excess persecutory feelings.
A lightning rod.
A lightning rod. It was in the first 15 minutes of a five-day program, I was attacked viciously by the student. The classes were large. It was over 100 people in a science amphitheater, and I struggled with that. That was the worst of all. I'm hoping better luck today. I asked Judith if I could do Chapter 7, Integration of the Negative, that deals with the via negativa, the Franciscan approach of incorporating the darkness in the culture. Yet, I was not prepared, as the days got closer and closer to October the 1st, for a kind of, in a hell. Every time I tried to do anything, I found I moved toward the most abstract. I had lined up a few mythological slides that I thought would be a good idea for us to look at, slides where the via negativa is most definitely present. Interesting, but quite distant. Then a week ago, I found myself humming. What's that song I'm humming? Well, I don't sing well, so I won't hum now. But the sound I was humming was, "Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk to you again." And I knew that I really needed to talk about darkness when I was going to talk about the via negativa. I needed to talk about the planet in peril. What is euphemistically, and I will use the word, climate change. And I was afraid. I was afraid that I would break down. I was afraid that you would be angry. I was afraid of just about any unknown. About 3 months ago, casually, I took out a book from the Goleta Public Library. It's a new book. It's called The Sixth Mass Extinction. It's written by Elizabeth Colbert. And I was shocked silly. I won't talk about her right now. I want to go on because I think what I want to do is to build a container for us to do a little looking at this topic and then also point to what we and other people have done already who have already looked at the data. We are very much in the spirit of Francis, St. Francis, because when Francis was a young man, as he walked through the neighboring lanes of Italy, he came across a church, San Damiano Church, and it was a church that physically was in disrepair. But you could go in, and he went in. And he heard, "Rebuild my church, it is falling down." And I'm going to suggest we might need to paraphrase that for our coming desolation. I know that many of you have had the courage to read the data from the science and other sources. It isn't pretty. I'm sure that some of you want to avoid all thoughts of something so horrific and possibly think, some of you, that it's all a ploy, a hoax to get us to share more with the poor. What I am going to do in a few minutes is to have Tom lead us in an old 70s song. I think it was 70s. 60s song, okay. This concept of the via negativa is firstly to remind us that we have been here before. We've been at this point before. Most of you, I think, are, you know, were alive and ticking in the 60s and 70s and 80s when we faced the doomsday clock. Do you remember it? 3 minutes to midnight and then 2 minutes to midnight. And as a world, we came to our senses fairly slowly and demanded that the powers of our planet were playing dice. And we demanded change. And under Ronald Reagan and Khrushchev, we had the treaty that was the most significant, the START Treaty, in which the U.S. had 30,000 nuclear bombs on the ready, and the Soviet Union had 40,000. We now have too many, 5,000, 6,000, 4,000. But that's a lot of difference. And the atmosphere in which we walk is very different than it was back in the 80s. Naomi Klein and others remind us it was only because as a country we demanded change, and among those things that supported our demands were our voices that sang songs, that asked us to be more conscious of everything around us, not just nuclear warfare. I would like to ask you, us, to remember those days in the past and to again sing, "Hello, darkness, my old friend," and renew whatever memories you have from that, and with the respect that music can be more persuasive than lectures. So anybody need a copy of it? Because you do? Okay, good. I'll turn off.
There's a sound of silence.
I didn't find how to dampen it. I just noticed that was from an album called Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. I know Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. I would like us to sing that in the second half also, and then maybe we could have some time to be in little pairs or triplets to talk about what you need to say. But now, let me tell you about this briefly. In 1994 at La Casa de Maria, there was a conference for people who cared about the planet from all over the world. And among the people who came was Tom Van Sant. And he is someone who still has a website that has dedicated his ability to use weather satellites of the Earth and make composites of them to look at changes, both micro and macro, in the planet. And he prepared this particular one at the time because he was working with Al Gore, and so this wasn't prepared for the conference, it was prepared for a program he did with Al Gore. And what it does is gives you five views of the planet, and it would have been around 1994, not the earliest view of the planet from space. And it's called Six Global Views. So I'll put it down here and you can come and look later if you wish. This proudly hangs in our house, with a note from Tom to my Don. Okay, this is the list of references. We'll come back to that later. This is what we're going to try to do today. We've done this. Introduction to chapters 6 and 7, Sounds of Silence. So now, what I'd like to do is to talk a bit theoretically, but just a bit, on the via negativa, and do it, first of all, from a psychological and spiritual point of view, and then move to it from a cosmic point of view. Then I want to do, this is the most painful part, and I'm going to be relatively brief, I am. It's a planet in peril. And then, again, I had the grace, when I was knowing I needed to do something, give something for us, I looked through all my books on Kindle and I found Joanna Macy and a co-author who has a book called Active Hope, The Great Turning. And Joanna Macy brought to us, is Anne Jagua here? No. Anne Jagua, while we were in Still Point together, brought Matt Fox and Joanna Macy to La Casa de Maria for a weekend conference. And I imagine Ginny was there. I was there. I know that under Joanna Macy's incredible tutelage, I gained much more strength to walk the walk of being conscious, and that was around the nuclear doomsday clock. and then with a song again, and then hopefully have time for not just questions. I very much welcome your statements, and I know people can get carried away, but there's nothing like your sharing either your struggle or your discovery with us. And I had an opening just before talking to Alice, so we'll do that. Here at Word in Life, we have spent a lot of time with non-dualism. And the symbol par excellence of non-dualism is the yin-yang. Could have done that a little better, but it's not too bad. Symbol. Where we have a little bit of dark penetrating a sort of fishy shape, and a little bit of light penetrating a sort of fishy shape, but black. This symbol of yin and yang is very old in China, and believe it or not, its literal translation is the shady side of the mountain and the sunny side of the mountain. And you only have to take a trip from here over to the pass to see the difference between the shady side and the sunny side. The sunny side is the southern exposure, and it's pretty barren. The shady side is the one that has all the vegetation, all the live oaks. Well, in some places, it's even more extreme. So the dark is, you could say, a shady side, and the white is the sunny side. And there are pluses and minuses to both, because you're much more likely to have drought on the sunny side than on the shady side. We can use words that in our language are so weighted, but I'm going to use them because as a mathematician, they are absolutely neutral to me. Positive and negative. And so we could say, I think, that in the last 2,000 years, see if I can get this, we have had this white side having a free day. We've had so much expansiveness in the past 2,000 years. Some people would attribute it to patriarchy, but it could simply be to the excitement of us using our minds and just using everything. And we are now in a place where the balancing off of these two forces, the via positiva and the via negativa, needs some adjustment. We've allowed ourselves to use the good things of the earth without any kind of sense of what they need to naturally regenerate. And so we're kind of out of balance. But the symbol doesn't just refer to the earth, of course. I remember many years ago, in fact, the person was the subject of my master's thesis, one of the subjects. He was a talented young man, and I asked him to tell me how he imagined his spiritual life. And he said, "Oh, that's easy. I know. It's like a California oak." And I said, "Well, what about the California oak, do you like?" Well, he says, "Each year it just keeps expanding and expanding." I said, "You mean it has no fall, no winter?" And he said, "Precisely." Well, I happen to know this man throughout the 30 years that have happened since. And maybe 10 years later, he had to do what in the men's movement is called, I think the phrase is going through the ashes. And he did it, and he did it just marvelously. Maybe because he had such a solid oak tree underneath. But it's not possible to have, as us, just an ever-expanding ever expanding. Even the California oak trees are dying now. And do you know why they're dying? Some are, some aren't. Because the insects that are their natural enemy don't have a cold enough winter to die off. And that's happening all over the world. There are examples of forests dying without having to burn down, like all our California fires did. In fact, they make it easier for it to burn down because we're out of balance. And, okay. Psychologically, I want to talk psychologically why we're going to have via negativas, as well as spiritually, as well as cosmically. Here. This happens within the first 24 hours of life. The psychological theory that I follow, Melanie Klein, fills in those years between 0 and 2 that Freud talked so, I think, profoundly about. He picks it up at 2. But prior to that, Melanie Klein talks about the agony an infant goes through when the mother leaves the room. You know, no smell. All the infant is senses. No touch, no smell. Maybe a lingering smell. You know, no sound. And it is a moment of great testing for that infant. She goes on and says, you know, it's not just as though it's a necessary evil, you know, for mom to be able to take care of dad's needs or the siblings or herself get a break. It's absolutely necessary to grow a mind. That if we do not have absence and the back and forth of absence and presence, we won't grow a mind. Growing a mind means, first of all, the memory of all of the senses of the mom. We hold her smell. We hold her touch. We hold her image. And in that, we start to mentalize as opposed to just directly experience comfort. Melanie Klein says it well, if it wasn't for absence of the mother, we would not build a mind. That is, we might be content, but would be mindless jerks. Moving on to the spiritual level, because that is especially what Richard Rohr wanted to teach us about. If we are having a relatively good childhood, we also have experiences of the numinous, experiences of the divine. We have experiences of the divine as we experience the love of the mother. But in some way, we are able to move to that as larger than, especially if we have a mind that can hold on to that love, that we can gradually over time experience those things, those comforts, more than that, those surprises as having something larger than the family, the numinous experiences of synchronicity. You know, when something, of course, for the child, the mother miraculously appears when the child is just most thirsty. But then all of a sudden, we find synchronicities in our life. And when we experience that synchronicity, it couldn't be a parking place. You know, whether or not we prayed to Jesus for a parking place, all of a sudden a parking place appears when we were, you know, and we say, oh, thank you. We feel bigger. We feel ourselves more generous. We feel more we can take the next step. You know, other kinds of numinous experiences we might get, we most quite possibly get from nature. The exquisite beauty of a sunset. there. I don't know how many of you got to see the blood red supermoon in the sky. It was a hard night to see it here in Santa Barbara because there were clouds playing hide and seek. But I kept on running out every 15 minutes to see, and I got at least two good views of it. But when you see that, there's something that enlarges you. And I would call that grace. I would call that a divine experience that holds up whether you believe in God or not. It is a numinous experience. It's an experience of something larger than ourselves. Could we say then that the absence of a numinous experience builds a hard heart? And that, I'm reading it wrong. It's the absence of numinous experience that might build faith that there would be the numinous at another time in our life. You know, that if you take long walks in the woods and you find, you come across the unexpected, your heart's full. Then when things are hard, just like the infant has, you have a mind that tides you over because you have a memory that does that. In both cases, psychological and spiritual, life might provide too much absence. It is a delicate balance. It is knowledge of too much that keeps people like me in work. It fosters therapists and missionaries to spend time with those who have lost hope or even the memory of presence of a loving mother. The absence actually of a safe experience in childhood is most likely the most prevailing thing that brings people into the therapy room. Well, the planet too can get too much of a good thing and need a time of darkness, and that we will turn to next. Okay. Can I just hear a few words from you? I'm lonely. Tell me where you are, and then I will start to go to this place of a planet in peril. Yes?
We have to have the microphone.
Okay, yes.
I was just going to share with you that on Sunday night when the eclipse was happening, we had decided that one of the best places to see it was to go to the Biltmore and sit out on their terrace because the moon was just right up above, and so it was perfect. So anyway, we did that, and we were able to see. You couldn't really see the orange. There wasn't that much orange because of the clouds, but we saw the eclipse, and it was very interesting what happened because here was people who were all strangers to each other. Nobody knew each other. And yet, something sort of happened where people started talking to each other and introducing themselves. And it just became a very sort of warm environment.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just actually the sharing of the eclipse seemed to do this.
To form community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And I hadn't really thought about it until you brought it up. Yes. And I thought, yeah, it really was that, where you just felt like we were one. We were a community, you know. So it was very interesting.
I heard that was so up there at, that real grassy section on City College and further down, but closer above Letterman's Beach and that area. You were there. Anybody else want to make a comment or two? And at this point, yes, there too. And you can just wait. Right? No, you can start and then. I have to come back so I don't get a feedback.
So, Don, I just want to let you know I'm right here with you, with your subject. And it's something that I've struggled with since the 80s, and there's a lot I could say about that, but I've come to a place of both deep grief and hope. Uh-huh. And I really applaud you bringing it up and just giving us a framework for that darkness. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Linda. When you were sharing about this whole experience of needing both the light and the darkness, I've been kind of become a student of watching nature. And I'm really impressed of what it has to teach us. And the fall in particular is a season where we are harvesting what has been planted, mm-hmm. but we have to store it mm-hmm. in order to use it in times mm-hmm. of need, you know, in mm-hmm. the darkness, in winter, or whatever. But at the same time as we are harvesting, a change is happening and all the leaves are falling. I mean, it's a time of letting go. And so all these things that take us into a winter, which everything is, the seeds that have fallen lie dead, you know, basically dead and dormant. Yeah. In a big mess of, you know, decomposing things, and need that darkness in order to nurture and then grow again. But it's kind of what you're saying. It's a powerful visual of what actually is happening in our life and needs to happen in our
yes,
life.
Yes, yes. And we have many stories of death and resurrection.
Yeah.
And I thank you for bringing that so sharply,
yeah.
because this is important to engage that image.
Yeah.
Not just death and courage, like I would have wanted if my mother were close to me when she was dying to have been there with her. You know, I wouldn't have wanted to go somewhere else and not be in the room. I mean, it's not fun, but I want that. It's not just having the death vigil. There is this hope that somewhere, actually, I have a memory from childhood, and my husband doesn't have this memory at all, so maybe you all don't. I lived in the West Indies as I was growing up, and in the West Indies we got movies from the United States that they showed on our one screen. We often got serial movies. Do you remember back in the 50s serial movies? And do you remember the serial movies typically would have the main characters in a room, say, with the walls coming to close them? No hope. No hope. You know, and then you would come the next week and they'd show, meanwhile, back on the ranch, you know, help was coming. So, Tom.
I got another song in mind that talks to this.
Okay.
It's The Rose by
yes.
Amanda McBroom.
Yes.
Some of the lyrics. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's only seed. It's the heart afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes the chance. It's the one who won't be taken, who cannot seem to give, and the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. When the night has been too lonely and the road has been too long, and you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember in the winter, far beneath the bitter snows, lies the seed that with the sun's love, in the spring becomes the rose.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. I want to start with a message or some of the facts from one of the people who has been the longest in this field, talking, I mean, dedicating his whole life to it. And it's Bill McGibbon. And about 20 years ago, he wrote a book that was entitled End of Nature. And at that time, he formed a site on the computer, I mean, an organization called 350. He and other scientists in the scientific world had calculated that 350 particles of CO2 per million, particles of other stuff, was the place at which we could start to see chaos cascading. We're already seeing chaos cascading. You know, these floods are not the typical kinds of things. 350, and so he called his site 350. This is what it is today. 398.82. And in his book that he has just written, entitled, it's entitled Earth, E-A-A-R-T-H. And he wants it translated in French, you know, to be something Terre, T-E-R-R-E. He wants that iteration there. And he says that unless we were to do drastic things right now, first of all, when he wrote his book, Earth, 20 years later, he said the only thing that he's been wrong in is how fast things have gone. And he said he thinks it's improbable. Improbable is a word that does leave a lot of room. Improbable, we won't be able to stop the carbon emission till it's 650 parts per million. I leave it somewhat to your imagination what that can do. Do you remember, we used to use a lot the expression, if a butterfly flaps its wings in, blah-da-dee-da, then there's a tornado in. I found out the first place it was said publicly was butterfly flaps its wings in Brazil, there'll be a tornado in Texas. Who would have thunk? I never heard of that. At any rate, I spent some time years ago studying chaos theory because it fits right up my mathematical alley. And one of the principles of chaos theory is that there is not a lineal relation between something that is acts and what happens. That in chaos theory, there can be a wildly, wildly disproportionate effect from an event. This was sort of named or discovered in England when Lorentz, a mathematician in England and sort of an initiator of the theory we now call chaos theory. He was doing some absolutely gorgeous mapping of activity, which seemed to always settle down into nice predictable patterns. And then all of a sudden, something came in from the left, and it was wildly unpredictable. Bill McKibben says now, the debate about whether we're warming the planet is no longer interesting. That's a scientist's word, isn't it? We're interested in what we're going to do about it. He points out there's massive change underway already. The Arctic is in a death spiral. you know, we can get to the North Pole. Before we couldn't, because it was ice. It's all melted. We're going to be able to finally find a nice ocean path from the Atlantic to the Pacific and back. Things are in turning. They are in turn, rather. They are melting. They are drying. Us, California. They are flooding. They're acidifying. They're burning. Trees are dying because of insects surviving warm climates. Something that I just recently became aware of, and my grandson-in-law, works for Paramount, the big pistachio company. Now, over in the Central Valley, I don't know if you followed that at all, but the Central Valley got rid of nearly all their roses and planted pistachio trees. And they have been given unfettered water, the water that they need, no cutting back on their water, because they are such a good crop. What was shown on television two nights ago is when you cut open the pod, there is no nut there. And why? Because prematurely the flowers blossomed. There were no insects. They didn't have the beehives there. They didn't have them on their schedule. There wasn't the pollination required. Now, that doesn't mean we'll have no pistachios, but it's going to be a small crop where they have put all, you know, of their whatever you put in that particular basket. Eggs? Yeah. That. You get an example of how nouns will refuse to be tracked. Where am I time-wise?
5 minutes.
Okay. I want to finish this before break, because when I come back, I want to talk about Joanna Macy and the other, and then go to questions. So we don't need to hear too much of this. A few more. An author, besides the book that woke me up, the book The Sixth Mass Extinction. The fifth mass extinction was when the asteroid hit the planet and the dinosaurs were wiped out. There hasn't been a mass extinction since. In that particular book, they place the sixth mass extinction as already having begun. And those people who keep count of it, the species that are dying are not one or two a year. There are half a dozen a day. And most of these species have never been named. I happen to have two personal friends who are deep oceanographer biologist, and one has a species named after him, and the other one is going to sit for her PhD in these are people who hang out with my 35-year-old grandson, and those 30-somethings are something to behold. At any rate, she, I think, hopes to have a species named after her, but I asked her if it was true that they are, you know, in her experience of, she does her research, poor lady, in Tahiti. And she goes down, you know, with wetsuits on or all the rest to find those wonderful undiscovered species. I asked her, is it true that they're dying faster than you can name them? She said, yes, because the oceans have become acidic. And they think that it's possible if acidification continues at this rate that it won't be another dozen years when the corals will start to die. Already, every day, we hear about a shark off of our coast. The sharks aren't there because they're better-looking people on the beaches. The sharks are there because it's warmer. And warmth is what causes hurricanes. warmth is what melts melts our water source for the coming years. So that even if we have a wonderful El Nino and we get a lot of rain, we have lost our storage system in the Sierras because there's not going to be as much snow held there. That number, you hear it often if you listen to these stations. It's not pretty. It's not good. Let's hear a word from the Pope. Okay. What is needed, he says, is a politics which is far-sighted and capable of a new integral and interdisciplinary approach to handling the different aspects of this crisis. But it is we humans, above all, who need to change. And then he goes on. I know that Keith and a group from St. Anthony's meet regularly to read Laudate Si. I've only read it in the last 2 weeks. He says, environment, what we really mean is relationship existing between nature and society. You cannot have environment without having someone who is in it. And they have to relate back and forth with each other. Okay, I'll stop at that point. When I come back, I will talk a little, not a lot, because I think we might have to even consider, if people wanted, this book, The Great Turning, by Joanna Macy, as a book, Act of Hope, we'd read together. But that will depend on whether people want to be able to stay and hang in with this topic or not. Okay, thank you. Let's have a...